The Comic Cast. I'm Greg.
I'm Liam.
We're still here, trapped in New York, desperately looking for an exit.
I feel like Kurt Russell.
Yeah. in which movie?
In Escape from New York. That was Kurt Russell, right? Yeah,
sure. I was hoping to say Escape from LA.
Today on the show we have John R. Dilworth, who is an animator who created Courage the Cowardly Dog, which ran for a couple of seasons on Cartoon Network. It was based on a short, The Chicken from Outer Space, which was nominated for an Academy Award. Yeah. So we went downtown to have a chat with him.
Well, I guess I'll officially start then.
I don't curse or insult anyone.
Oh, you can. We're an R-rated type of show.
It's an R-rated show? I'm not going to be encouraged.
We're here with John R. Dilworth. They're projecting your films on the side of the skyscraper here in Manhattan. How's it going?
I believe everything's working. The screen looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The weather may not be cooperating. However, it's a fantastic civic space. And for the citizens and tourists of New York City, this is a refuge to take some time off and enjoy animation or multimedia or cinema in a lovely square.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We were standing outside for a good
15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, before we realized that there was
an indoor.
We're like,
warm-blooded animals.
Oh, we're used to the cold. How did you get started in animation, if that's not such a huge question?
No. How did I get started? I was doing children's book illustrations in school, and somehow they weren't satisfying enough, the illustrations. I had wanted to see them move. And from that point on, I pursued a way of learning how to make my drawings move.
Did you go to college to study animation?
Yeah, I went to the School of Invisible Arts. They changed the name now. It's called School of Visual Arts.
Okay.
And sure, but it wasn't easy. Many students talk about getting into schools. And even I was turned down twice by one university. And then I found SVA.
Do you think you can be like taught much in college? Like how much can be talent and how much can be taught to you by...
Well, I don't know. For me, I have a different perspective because I do a lot of lecturing and mentoring to students, young talent. And I don't see a formula. I see only the artist and how they express themselves. And for me, I try to nurture that. Not try to, the anxiety of trying to draw like Da Vinci or Michelangelo, let's say. And I disagree. I think that the innate nature of the line or the perception, that unique vision, right, that should be nurtured. And that vocabulary, that's essential. Not to draw like anyone else. I mean, of course, we should understand what has come before and the fundamentals. I mean, how to sharpen a pencil or turn a computer on, the tools. But ultimately, I think it's the developing of the personal mythologies and how they get out, into an audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Or get out of the self. I mean, this thing.
How did you, did I read somewhere that you started off, or when you left college, you went into advertising? Like, where did you find the time to work on solo projects? Because I presume you were working on them on your own, or did you have help? Or?
Yeah, it was unique. I didn't feel like I really learned much in university. I wanted to learn on my own. I wanted to learn by doing. So I was always making films. But to get work out of school was very difficult. And so I was lucky to get a job in an agency for a few years. Even worked in a printing shop. And on the weekends, I was working in a woman's clothing store, mopping floors and, like, changing the clothes on the mannequin in the windows. And it's a humiliating thing to do. But, you're young and you can do it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would do it now.
Right. And then You got through a good few shorts before you got started with The Chicken from Outer Space.
No, it was before that.
Oh,
I think it was really, when Lily Laney moved in, that started something. And then, I don't know if it was the empty, I don't know what it really was. I think it was Lily Laney led to Psyched for Snuppa, which was a pilot for Nickelodeon. And I started to begin developing a dialogue with animation. And then that led to MTV projects. Neither one got produced. One short got produced. But both pilots got produced, but none went to series. And then the Dirty Birdie happened. And then the Dirty Birdie led to making The Chicken from Outer Space, and The Chicken from Outer Space led to... There was a sequential attachment from art to commerce, enabled more art.
How did you find the marriage of?
I don't really think I did. I still don't. Really, I don't.
Even dealing with.
I think it was
with,
just luck.
Yeah.
Because I don't think analytically. Like, I can't calculate. I'm unable to calculate. Like, oh, I know what's selling now. This kind of form of entertainment, and audiences tend to relate to this now. No, I never pursued that. I just pursued a sort of more selfish, almost irrational goal, and that was something personal.
Did you meet any walls going about things that way?
Absolutely. The biggest among were personalities, like arrogance, pride, ego. All of these qualities that I feel with the proper mentorship can be managed in a young talent so that they, let's say that the road to collaboration with commerce can be less difficult.
What advice would you give to young animators or filmmakers in terms of getting their shorts started or off the ground?
You have to make a short that has some appeal, whether it's an avant-garde piece, which I prefer, or experimental, or you're going to go for a popular film. I mean, I don't know. Mm. It's very specific to the endeavor, but the most common is you make your film and you try and get it selected in as many venues as possible without... increasing the personal costs of that, but the what they say, the catch 22 is that you have to spend a little in the beginning to establish a name, a reputation.
And when you started, when Courage the Cowardly Dog got commissioned for a series, how did you find working with so many more people than you would have been used to?
Surprisingly easy.
Okay.
Surprisingly easy. Yeah.
And
I was always good working with crews.
Okay.
And either as a director on somebody else's show, or just an innate attraction to delegating. So when I bumped up to a large staff like that, I had key personnel that worked along with me, and we all worked on a single goal with. Intention. So it really does, it sort of works on its own if you have the key personnel. But that's the thing, is hiring the right people and then knowing when someone's not working out to get a divorce, and always that's gonna cost.
And the style of Courage is really unique. To sound kind of like a mix between animation and CGI at times, and how did...
Again, it's an extension of all the interests I personally have, and I felt like I was very lucky. We were all very lucky at this time, at this period. There was a lot of experimentation in animation during the late 90s, right? Still, and even into the early zeros. And I was given a lot of confidence. So I was able to work in stop motion, clay puppets, live action, CGI, photorealism. As long as the mediums were integrated in the narrative and did not feel like it was an intrusion. And see, and that's a different craft, a subtlety, you know, like stitching fabric, you know.
Yeah,
you,
absolutely.
You don't want to show the mend.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, after Courage, or actually one thing I wanted to ask you about Courage was when he finally got a voice, the character had a voice, I always wondered the decision behind that, if there was you know, if there was more scope for storytelling, you know, and giving him a voice where he had remained silent for...
It was an experiment. The first couple episodes, we tried him speaking.
Okay.
And he sounded... we had him modeled a sort of proto Jackie Mason. And I don't know, the executives felt that the dog worked better the way he was in the original pilot.
Okay.
And then... that's the way it happened. I think one, I mean, now we're talking about voices and changes. It's interesting how the color of the dog was such an impasse, at least with merchandise.
Okay.
I mean, the idea that he wasn't like a more masculine color for boys being a dog really hurt its merchandising potential. As buyers would say, I mean, the fear was boys won't buy a pink dog. Even though Pink Panther is pink.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if Pink Panther is marketed to... I mean, see, then there's a whole other world of calculation in your animation. So when you're making animation, as a creator, director, or producer, you're thinking, how are others going to make money off of this?
Yeah.
So it's never just one step process, never just fulfilling and delivering the goods. It's always everybody that wants to live off it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that takes an adjustment in thinking.
Was there any ever talk of changing his color? I mean, did it ever get...
It was a little bit too late. And right. We're fully committed, so we were locked into the color.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the sound design of the show? I think I read somewhere rather than kind of stock audio pieces, it was kind of original recordings.
Yeah, Michael Geisler, longtime sound designer, working out of Los Angeles, he had done a great number of stretch films, shorts, and he did all of the series. And the music was composed by Jody Gray and Andy Ezrin here in New York City. And it's probably the two of the most satisfying components of this series, is working with the post-production, because they're brilliant men.
After Courage, what direction did you see yourself going in, you know, afterwards?
I think a nervous breakdown.
Really?
Sure.
Wow.
Sure. I've sort of blown myself up.
So where did you take it from that? Do you know what I mean?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an amazing piece of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems very personal.
Absolutely, very personal. But so many things were happening at the time of life that the buildings collapsed. And, I mean, that really had a big impact on everybody in New York. I mean, even in the studio... I mean, we just took the day off, maybe 2 days off. I mean, we didn't do anything. Artists were just hanging around the studio, not knowing what to do. There was no incentive to work. It was a real collision. Well, Life in Transition has a lot as a reaction to the events of 9/11. There's so many symbols in the film of 9/11.
Okay.
If you've seen the film, you can see them. In the horizon, the debris of the buildings, you could see the papers floating through the landscape. If you remember all the papers that were blowing in the air. And there's the airplane. I've stitched in many, many symbols.
Tell us about Rinky Dink.
Oh, well, Rinky Dink, Rinky Dink. Rinky Dink was a film I was able to produce with co-production partners in Spain. And it was an experiment. I wanted to learn Flash, and I wanted to learn stop motion and work with other cultures, as is in Spain. And it was also a sort of a love story in a way. I don't know what more to say. It's another. It's an experiment.
What are your influences? Have they changed? You know, from when you were still in college, or they're still?
No, they're still the same. My new film, called Bunny Bashing, it's even a greater experiment where now I'm integrating live action into my narratives with animation, and I'm really. It's a really weird experiment. And it would be great for you to see it. I could send you a link.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can see it, and you can make your own observations or write me questions about it. But I see that my influences from Clampett, from the Termite Terrace anarchists, cartoonist anarchists, and the sophistication of Charlie Chaplin, they just continue to be refined. And then with the mediums and the digital accessibility, there's really no limitations except the imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice to have the resources, let's say, of our friends Parker, you know, South Park, these kids. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But again, the limitations that one artist has, I think it's also creative, a source of inspiration.
Yeah. And what about international influences? I think I read somewhere about Studio Ghibli before you'd mentioned in
Miyazaki.
Yes,
it's just a brilliant. That's brilliance. Brilliance. Yeah. But I wouldn't draw. I don't draw that way.
Yeah.
And Miyazaki doesn't get far out, exaggerated, surreal. I mean, he gets surreal in a different way. I mean, but I like Dali. I like distortion. Really, exaggeration. There's a grotesqueness I like as well. There's a great. I have a group exhibit in Williamsburg called Too Art for TV. It's going on until the April 23rd, and it's really worth seeing because it's the fine art of animators and animation talent that's not for TV.
Okay.
And it's a group show of all of these, and I have 8 pieces in there that's really, really, really quite different. And overall, the show is terrific.
Yeah.
Too Art for TV.
We were at the Sex Museum earlier on. They had an exhibition of the kind of erotic drawings from comics. That it was great to see a really different side to, you know.
Crummy also has an exhibition.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We were trying to find it, actually. We got lost trying to find it. We're not very
I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it.
What direction are you headed now? What are you working on anything now? Or?
Well, I just finished this new film.
Yeah.
And I'm in pre-production on my next horror comedy. It's really ambitious, but I think I'm going to move away from experiments and go back to narrative storytelling.
Okay.
And of course, there's other obligations, commercial obligations. But I think for now, it's getting Bunny Bashing out into the world, seeing what the reaction to this kind of thing it is.
Right.
And I would actually like to make more of it. But when you see it, you'll understand.
Okay.
And then finding the resources to produce my horror comedy.
Okay. Had you ever considered doing a feature-length piece or another series?
Oh, it's funny. When after The Chicken from Outer Space was so well-received, I went to L.A. for a week, and I was pitching a feature idea in a spacesuit, in a silver spacesuit. Really, I lived in this spacesuit for 1 week in L.A., driving in my car, eating, going to the studios, taking meetings with executives. Nobody said a thing. It was the most normal thing to be seen in L.A. with a spacesuit.
That's so,
we did that. And then Paramount Nickelodeon, we tried to work on a project once, and that went into turnaround. And I don't think there were too many other opportunities than that. I'm actually executive producing a independent feature with Michael Sporn.
Okay.
Actually, his feature. And we hope to get rolling on that pretty soon. But other than that, I don't feel compelled to tell a long-form story.
Okay.
Or at least none that has come to me yet.
Yeah.
We tried to run up a Courage feature. But there wasn't a political will behind it.
Right.
You know.
So I remember the Powerpuff Girls film. I
don't know what happened with that.
Yeah.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was disappointing to a lot of people, and that kind of turned, I don't know, maybe changed the climate for investing in any more TV product or feature.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Again, bad timing. Good timing and bad timing. It's like this.
I wanted to ask, have you ever seen The Secret of Kells?
Sure, I did. Sure, I did. Admired it tremendously. That was a great, ambitious enterprise and pulled it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are they doing? Are they doing anything
more now?
Yeah,
they're working on another one called Song of the Sea.
Where is that being produced? In Dublin?
Yeah. Well, it's in the studios in Kilkenny.
Kilkenny. I love Kilkenny.
Oh,
I've been there, sure.
Have you been? Okay.
Yeah, Cork. I've been down there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, it's not there.
Yeah.
I love that area.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, that's about it.
That's the end of it.
Yeah.
Very well done, man. That was
We're back. That was John R. Dilworth. Fascinating interview with that guy. He had a lot of interesting stuff to say.
He did. We actually went down. They were screening his animated shorts outside on the side of a building, and we were standing outside like chumps watching these in the freezing cold, and we're like, where's everybody else? Oh, it must be out here, and you know, but there's no sound, it doesn't make any sense. But still, we didn't question it too much, and we stayed in the cold for, you know, a good 20 minutes
easily
before realizing that everyone was like in a cafe behind us, you know, in the warmth with tea, with headphones.
Yeah, we looked like big fools.
Yeah
I guess we'll be back in a few weeks with more New York shenanigans. Or will we? I don't know. I'm not sure of the timeline of these podcasts. We might be back home.
Definitely don't ruin the magic of how this is done.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Let's get out of here.
We'll see you soon. All right. Taxi.
Talking all